We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Sooner Sports Podcast, presented by Riverwind and Allstate. Now, here's your host, Chris Plank.
Welcome back to the Sooner Sports Podcast. It's been a minute. We didn't have a Friday episode, Toby. I was ill under the weather and then the crazy back and forth to Stillwater. So no excuses, but after, gosh, speaking of road warriors, man, how's your rest schedule after the down and back to Tulsa last night in Bedlam baseball?
Solid nap.
Good.
Today. So, you know, that's it's not a lot in my life have I mastered, but the afternoon nap is one of my strengths. And so, another quality one I was able to knock out today, and I'm right back on track again.
Beautiful. That's all it takes, man, is a little nap. Well, let's reset it. You had a chance to hang out a little bit before we talk softball with the OU Club of Tulsa, and then a tough one last night in Tulsa. By the way, first of all, kudos, OU Club of Tulsa. Awesome people. But we couldn't carry that good luck over from your hanging with them to the field, could we?
No, it was not a good night. You know, OU's had a midweek issue ever since they moved Braden Carmichael to the weekend. And, you know, that was a great move. So Braden Carmichael was their midweek guy until he shut down Arkansas. And that earned him a spot in the weekend rotation, and deservedly so. And he's been very good. Obviously, almost a no-hitter last weekend. Or he had a no-hitter when he left the game through seven innings. I think he's got a 6-1 record now. So he's been great. But that left a midweek spot open, and it's been a struggle to figure out, you know, how to get that done this year. They've basically gone by committee every Tuesday or Wednesday since then that they've had a game, and they've had a hard time not walking guys. They out hit Texas Tech a week ago in Amarillo, but lost by 10 runs because of all the free passes, walks and hit batters. And a similar situation last night in Tulsa with OSU. Sooners out hit them, but they lost 7-3 in a game they were really never in, because of all the walks and hit batters. So I think it was 9 walks and 3 hit batters. And I mean, you give any team, much less one the quality of Oklahoma State, 11 or 12 free guys on base, and that's hard to win. So I know it's been frustrating for Skip. There are some guys with electric arms, like Javier Ramos, like Christian Rubeck, certainly Dalton Fowler. And it has just been a struggle this year to get them to consistently throw strikes. When they do, they're nearly unhittable. But when they don't, then it usually leads to a big inning for the opposition. So that was the case last night. It was a game Oklahoma needed to win and didn't get it done. So now that squarely puts them behind the eight ball for these last two conference series, Texas Tech this weekend, then at Baylor, and they need to do something special here to give themselves a shot.
I will say the Big 12 in baseball, it gives you some opportunities to have big RPI weekends with how strong this conference is. Yeah. And Tech is no different coming in this weekend, are they?
No, that's right. That's right. Texas Tech top 10 RPI. So if you could beat them a couple of times, that's going to help you tremendously. Baylor is top 40 RPI, and those will be road games. So if you could beat them a couple of times, that'll do you good. And you've always got that last safety net of the Big 12 tournament, you know, if you could get hot and make a run there. So there is opportunity, but, you know, it's last night would have helped a lot. Last night would have helped a lot, and these are going to be tough games. There's a reason Texas Tech is ranked as high as they are. There's a reason road wins count for more, because they're hard to get. So they need to do something special. Now, I think what we're going to see is, you know, they've won two of three each of the last two weekends. OU has, against Oklahoma State and at West Virginia. They've won back-to-back conference series here, and we've seen Jason Ruffcorn take on a bigger and bigger role. He went six-plus innings against OSU. He went seven-plus innings against West Virginia. And I think we're going to see him start this weekend against Texas Tech. You saw Jake Bennett pitch last night in relief, and he's been their Saturday starter. And I think that was a pretty good indication that Skip has decided to use Ruffcorn either Friday or Saturday as a starter now, which, you know, he's dynamic and certainly gives you a shot anytime he takes the mound. But it's an uphill task they've given themselves, but there is an opportunity.
Interesting is we've been sitting here chatting, T-Row. The Big 12 has just unveiled its all Big 12 softball awards. Patty Gasso, Coach of the Year. Jocelyn Allo, Player of the Year. Grace Lyons, Defensive Player of the Year. Freshman T.R.A. Jennings, the Freshman of the Year. The only award they didn't take home was Pitcher of the Year. Carrie Eberle won that from Oklahoma State. They placed five players on the first team, all Big 12, most of any school, and one of them was a pitcher, Shannon Sale. I mean, absolutely unbelievable. You have three more players that made second team. You had three players on the all-Big 12 freshman team. Pretty incredible, the run that we've witnessed through Big 12 play for softball this year and winning its ninth straight conference title, man. It's been awesome.
Yeah, that is not surprising. The thing that jumps out at me there is the pitcher of the year was not OU, and you said there was five first-teamers?
Yes.
Which means there were four spots that they gave to somebody else. So there's the chip on the shoulder they need going into Big 12 tournament. How dare they not give OU all of them? So, no, I mean, it's been an amazing year and a wildly entertaining finish for you up in Stillwater last
year.
Yeah,
it was great, man. I've made JT do some heavy lifting on this podcast for us, Toby. So he's going to join us whenever you and I wrap up. But, you know, it was truly one of those environments this week in that, you know, you want to see your team perform well, in, I think is the best way to put it, right? Because if you lose in those types of settings, it's the worst. But when you go in and you win, right, and you're sitting in the crowd and you call a home run, and you know, I don't know if people know this, I tend to be a little excitable, and all of a sudden every so often there's a fan that might kind of turn around and give you a look. But it was I'm saying nothing bad. Oklahoma State, their fans, for as much as they gave it to the OU players on the field, they were great to me, and they were loud. They've created a cool environment there, Toby. And get this, there's bracketology for softball. And right now, of the seven teams that play softball in the Big 12, five of them are projected to make the tournament. So tell me how impressive you think that is. Now, granted, there's 3-1 seeds likely, and there are three teams that are going to host regionals, and I hope three teams that end up having a shot to host a super regional, but I think that's about as high of a percentage as you can get from a league, 5 of 7 making the big dance. I know the SEC is going to get all of them in, but still, that's pretty cool, I think.
Yeah, that's fantastic, and kudos to the Big 12, you know? I mean,
yeah.
It was kind of OU and Texas there for a while, and Oklahoma State obviously has improved dramatically in recent years with Kenny Gajewski, and for them to potentially get 5 teams in says that the conference as a whole is on the rise, and it's not just Oklahoma anymore or Oklahoma and Texas anymore. So that's good, and that should be a good indication of, or hopefully you would think, of what the committee's going to think of the Sooners.
Agreed.
Do you still think they're going to be the number 2 overall seed?
Well, I was pretty adamant whenever you asked me on your radio show. Toby and I do a show on the same station on Sports Talk 1400, and you had asked if I thought they were going to be the 1 seed, and I was like, nah, I don't think so. But this College Sports Madness has them projected as the number 1 overall seed. So I still think that there's a lot of bias towards the Pac-12 and the SEC, but you have 3 teams from the Big 12 right now that are in the top 9 of the RPI. 3, Toby. That's incredible to me. There's 4 SEC, 3 Big 12, and I think, 2 Pac-12s that are in the top 10, top 9 of the RPI, if I got my math right there. So that's pretty impressive. And Oklahoma won 5 of the 6 games they played against those teams that are in the top 9 of the RPI. So maybe after winning the series against Stillwater, knowing how high their RPI truly is, I think that might actually work some wonders for them. I think they could still end up being the 1 seed, but there is that bias towards the Pac-12 and the SEC. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Hey, I want to throw a curveball at you before I let you get out of here. There's a sneaky, interesting event on the sports calendar that I know you and I are very passionate about and we love to follow. You know what starts next week? The men's golf regionals get underway.
Yes.
Next weekend. I'm loving Ryan Hibble's team, and I know usually the championship is right around the same time as the college baseball super regionals, but we're looking good in both men's, especially men's golf. Women's golf, not too shabby either, but regionals right around the corner, T-Row.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is a national championship caliber team, and they're going to be, I think they're in Albuquerque for the regional.
You're right.
And that's not going to be an issue. I mean, they're going to coast through that and get to the national championships. And then it's going to be at Donnybrook. And it's in Scottsdale this year.
Yep.
I wish it was a little closer because I love going to that event. And what a marathon that is, because you play, I think it's 4 stroke play rounds to make the cut, to be in the field that the top 8 that ends up, you know, going for the match play national championship. And it's just fabulously entertaining. And you look at OU, Texas, and OSU in the Big 12 tournament this year up at Prairie Dunes and how they all finished within a shot of each other. Just those 3 schools alone are so competitive. And you add in some other really good squads around the country, and this is going to be fun. But they're a veteran team. They've got guys like Quade Cummins and Garrett Reban, Patrick Welch, that have been there before. They're not going to be intimidated or nervous about being on a big stage like this. And I like their chances. I like their chances of at least putting themselves in that match play. And then once you get there, there's some luck that factors in at that point, but you give yourself a shot at a national championship if you can do that.
Love it. Toby, have a great rest of your Wednesday, and we'll talk to you next Tuesday back on the regular schedule, man.
See you, Chris Plank.
Yeah, and by the way, he mentioned those dates. Toby was dead on with them. The regionals coming up on May 17th, so that is, Monday. And then the NCAA championship is May 28th to June 2nd. When I said super regionals, I meant our Essential Super Regionals. My sports schedule sometimes date-wise is so messed up in my head, but good luck to Ryan Hibble's team. We'll see if we can't get him off the on the pod next week. All right, one of my guys, JT Gasso, hitting coach for the Oklahoma Sooners, off a big weekend for the Sooners, getting us ready for the Big 12 championship. What's up, man? How's the couple of days been? I know that you got a chance to celebrate your wife's birthday and Mother's Day, but had to feel great coming off this team responding the way that they did after some adversity on Friday.
It was a big a big weekend for us. Played hard, got after it, and it was good to take a little day off, spend it with family, and we're just ready to go for another week.
JT Gasso is in the house, hitting coach for the Oklahoma Sooners in his sixth this season. OU heading into the Big 12 tournament as the Big 12 champs, ninth time. What was Saturday's experience like for you? And knowing that coach had not been ejected, she was ejected in 16, but it wasn't for arguing a call. I don't think she's been ejected for ages arguing a call. Had you guys ever had a conversation about the pecking order and then who takes over and who coaches third? What was the preparation like for a moment like that?
Yeah, so, I mean, we've practiced that before where I'll be in the third base box doing signs, like in practice. We had a plan in place for if that ever happened. It's just one of those, you know, emergency only, break glass, type situations.
Gotcha.
But, we're all so much on the same page that when she went out, it was one of those things where it was, you know, we'll pick you up. The team knew, like, hey, no big deal. We got this. Let's do it. And the rest is just kind of history. But yeah, I felt like we were prepared for that situation. Not like saying, hey, going into Bedlam, coach is going to get tossed. So, but I know we've talked about it, you know, in the past before.
It was interesting to me because in those situations, you have to be careful because you feel like you've really been wronged from an umpiring perspective, but nobody wants to get fined. And then, JT, you step into a situation where immediately for you and Coach Rocha, there's controversy right away whenever we didn't know if a girl had been hit or if the handle of the bat had been hit or if she had swung. I mean, that was intense for a stretch there.
Yeah, and that's, one of the things is we're very respectful to umpires, and you know how we are, and it's not like anything that we're gonna, you know, get outside of the game and get outside of that moment right there. But you know, one of the things that we were just saying was, hey, you know, in that situation, we're just trying to fight for our team and fight for what we think is right. And like I said, it never got like too animated or outside of it.
Right.
We were just kind of blown away by, we won't get into that. But,
okay. I understand it because I was blown away too. But with that in mind, how about the way the two freshmen stepped up this week? And I'm talking specifically Nicole May and Jada Coleman. Now, obviously, JT, you work with the hitters, but I did want to ask about Nicole first, knowing that she can be a position player if called upon. We've seen her play first this year. But how impressive was that to see whenever you have two vets that struggle a bit and then a true freshman comes in what, you know, to Oklahoma State's credit, they had created a pretty hostile environment for those 3 days.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that we knew coming in that I feel like every single person on the roster is a gamer, and they're going to do what they need to do to win a game, and they're going to be in that mindset, and we're just going to compete. And that's all we are asking is for our athletes to compete. And, you know, Jada stepped up, Nicole May stepped up, it didn't seem like they were phased by anything, and that's awesome. That's what you want when you're competing. We'll just see how we can ride that kind of going forward. But maybe that's just something that they needed to put in their tool bag for their careers, you know.
Coach used a great analogy on Jada when she was watching her play, and I know that JT, just from the recruitment of her and bringing her to and getting her to come to Oklahoma, she's been on the radar for quite a while. And she said when she watched her play that it was like she was like a gnat, like a fly, where it always seemed like she was around something and she was always bothering the other team and making something happen. Beyond just what Jada Coleman brings at the plate, we see the fist pumps. We see the attitude. We see the adrenaline. JT, can you begin to quantify that extra it that she brings from an energy and a fiery perspective for this team?
Yeah, that's, you know, that was the one thing that she's always been really good at is playing, you know, just the way that she was brought up, the way that she does things. She's very passionate, and that's what you want when you're recruiting players is, you know, obviously you want the physical things, but the intangibles, you can't teach passion. It's not something that you can just give as a gift to somebody for Christmas, you know? So, the fact that she brings it every day, she brings it to practice. She is, she's hollering during practice, getting behind her teammates. And like I said, kind of before, it's just the competition part is just, we try and always bring it, in practices and let them kind of live in that world. So, it was no surprise whenever she was doing what she's doing, because that's the way she was, that's the way she's been built.
Yeah. JT Gasso is our guest. I brought this up from the Baylor game. I was going back because Baylor had a wild situation where their catcher got pulled in the middle of a pitch, and I was trying to go back to see what TV was saying about it. And when I was watching it, Michelle Smith said something that has really resonated with me. I try to learn, you know, JT. I'm not very smart, but I try to learn all the time about this sport and your approach. Are the girls doing anything different with their two-strike approach? Because it just seems as if they're so smart with understanding the strike zone. I know we had a couple of K's this weekend, but, you know, we're heading into the postseason, and there's only a handful of regulars that have even double-digit strikeouts on the season, which is crazy to me. What's kind of been the focus on the two-strike approach for this team?
Yeah, well, I think it's just kind of – it's one of those things where it just varies. But one of the big things we talk about is, you know, the best way to hit with two strikes is don't hit with two strikes. So if you can put the ball – if you can leverage some counts and put the ball in play when you need to, you know, good things will happen. But, you know, that's the thing about when they get with two strikes, we've done a lot of work on the front end about just getting them ready for what they're going to see. And they kind of know where people will go and what to do when they're in those two strike situations. So the main thing though, kind of going back to like the Jada piece, is the competitiveness. Like I'm telling you, I know you saw it. It was just like everyone had that locked in, like, look, and it's been there like all year. It's just sometimes, you know, it's just, you don't, maybe it's, you know, there's not as many people in the stands, or it's a neutral site, or, you know, whatever. But that locked in look is always there with these hitters.
Interesting, because you do shift the lineup up a bit this week, and Jada moved back up to the leadoff spot where she had actually started the season. And Tiare Jennings, it's kind of interesting. You know, she hits a little bit of a slump. I think she was just like 1-for-9, 1-for-10 this weekend. But that one hit is still a laser over the right center field wall, and she's still batting cleanup. JT, the mindset when you see someone that goes through some struggles, but knowing, hey, it's there, you're going to work through it. It's this sport, right? It's a sport of failure, and it's continuing to stay focused for someone like Tiare, right?
Yeah, and that's the thing is when you're working with a game that is just all about, you know, averages, it's just about what, you know, how do you handle when, like, there's going to be stretches, like you said, when you're above your average, there's going to be stretches where you're below it. And, you know, and like, I think of a sport like basketball, if Steph Curry shoots 4 threes, or, you know, he misses 10 three-pointers in a row, he's not going to question his whole season up to that point, or his career, or his existence. He's just going to keep shooting. So it's one of those things, and that's just, you know, they obviously get way more shots off than you do at bats. But it's like kind of the same thing where, you know, that happens in everything. So you got to just stay locked in. That was the main message to her, was just keep staying locked in. You got this. You keep working. And then she came up big in that third game. So that's just something that she's going to learn, and that all our kind of our hitters have gone through, is those stretches where you're not at your best, where you don't feel at your best, or maybe the outcomes aren't what you want. But how do you stay locked into your foundations and just continue to be productive in different ways?
Yeah, two more, and I'll let you get out of here, JT. First, I feel like for people that follow baseball and then, you know, they jump into to softball, I don't think we truly grasp just how important the bottom of the lineup is. And I feel like over the last few years, that nine hole has become more and more important. I thought Oklahoma State had a really good nine hole hitter that was hitting like 450. We've been putting Nicole Mendez down there. I think that's a really good spot, JT. Can you kind of lay out the importance of that bottom of the lineup, specifically that nine hole, and turning it over to the top?
Yeah. So one of the things that, you know, we've kind of learned over the years is that your leadoff has the lead, or at least in softball, the average is that your leadoff has a significantly less amount of opportunities with runners in scoring position, but even on base, or sorry, with runners at scoring position. So it's one of those things where we totally emphasize just through the lineup of like what a quality at bat is, and our it doesn't matter if you're one or nine, like you got to find a way to one, just get on base. Because one of the things is you get on base, you're going to have more opportunity to score runs, right? Pretty simple. But it's one of those things where if we can just get our leadoff or the top of the lineup with more RBI opportunities or more runners in scoring position, then you're just going to see good things happen where you don't even have to get a hit to score runs, like exactly what happened with Jana Johns. She had first and second with no outs, and she hits a ground ball over the right side, moves them to second and third,
yep,
eliminates a double play, and then we end up scoring those two runs. So, and it was huge. So it was like, how are you being effective without, like, through different ways of just straight up getting a hit, you know?
Yeah. And then finally, and I think this is the question that people will ask a lot, and I know that you don't take a lot of credit for it, though you should. This team has set a record for the most home runs in Oklahoma Sooner softball history by a team. You know, Jossie is sitting there with 26. She hit one this weekend with pretty epic little bat flip that she claimed she didn't even realize she had done. What have you been able to equate it to anything, JT? What is it that has allowed this team to be so successful when it comes to the long ball? Is there... I mean, is there something you point to and say, yeah, that's it? Or is this just this team and this lineup being so deep?
No, one of the things that we really focused on these past couple of years is like more of like a holistic approach. And it just sounds kind of weird, but I mean, mentally, physically, technically, like just through all aspects of the game, like, can you understand what it is that you're trying to do? And what is your goal of your at bat? And like of just hitting in general, and just one of the things you'll hear all of hitters say is, "We're just trying to hit the ball hard." When you hit the ball hard, you know, good things happen. And then they, you know, there's a little bit more behind that too, with, you know, bat path and the pitch coming in. And, you know, there's a bunch of things, but I think this team's done a really good job of embracing just their overall development and understanding what they can do and like how to fix things, where the analogy is, you know, you're your own car and you're going to know when your engine light goes off and you need to know how to fix those things that's going on with what you're doing. Because at the end of the day, I'm just a guy who may see things, but at the end of the day, they're the ones who are feeling it, right? Mm-hmm. They're the ones that are feeling it and getting that input. So, yeah, they've done a really good job of understanding themselves and just, putting a clear-cut goal into what they're trying to do.
All right, thanks so much for joining us for the Sooner Sports Podcast. Again, I feel healthy. I'm getting better. Life is good. Let's go win a Big 12 championship and a tournament coming up this weekend for softball. Let's win a series against Texas Tech. Let's get excited about golf. And then we'll see about postseason for both softball and baseball. Regionals, we're looking like a setup where the Sooners are going to play at home in both the regionals and the super regionals, fingers crossed. But I have a big announcement to make. Here you go. This is for softball fans and people who like to be entertained. Aaron Miller is going to become a regular on our podcast starting on Friday. You heard that. no more sick days. As Bill Belichick once taught us, no days off. Aaron Miller every Friday and every Monday. Maybe that she might be part of our game plan on Tuesdays, kind of seeing how the schedule shapes up. But as we kick off the postseason for softball, ESPN personality, two-time national champion, captain of the Sooner softball team, Aaron Miller becomes a regular part of the Sooner Sports Podcast during the postseason starting on Friday. Until then, everyone have a great midweek. Until next time, Boomer Sooner, everybody.
This has been the Sooner Sports Podcast. The Sooner Sports Podcast is presented by Riverwind, home to a luxury hotel, fine dining, and never-ending rewards. Riverwind is still the one. And Allstate, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review however you listen. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Sooner Sports Network.